Rachel Moran grew up in North Dublin. After a troubled family background, she was taken into state care aged 14. She became homeless and got involved in prostitution aged 15, working in Dublin and other Irish cities for the following 7 years. Now, Stephen started by asking Rachel about her upbringing and what life was like as a child. Now, we should give you a warning this morning, particularly if you have children listening, that this is an interview about prostitution. It includes a graphic description of a violent, sexually motivated attack. So please switch over if there are any children listening, or if indeed you are likely to be upset or offended by the contents of the interview for the next 25 minutes or so.
Well, it was very difficult, being as I had two parents who were mentally ill. So that obviously gave, a tough enough start to life. But it was not too different from most of the girls that I was taking into state care at 14.
Your parents were mentally ill and bringing you up, is that right? And were they in hospital or were they with you in the house?
Well, my father was an outpatient and an inpatient by turns, and my mother was an outpatient always. Okay. Both of them were treated in the local psychiatric hospital, so... that part of things was very tough. Obviously, they were also very poor.
Your dad had a gambling addiction. Your mother was a schizophrenic.
My father was bipolar, and he had a compulsive gambling problem. And my mother was schizophrenic. Yeah, and she was a substance abuser.
And did you feel unloved or abandoned as a child?
Well, I certainly was abandoned when I was 14. I was told to get out of the house, and that's when things started going downhill from there.
And when you say downhill, what do you mean? What happened?
Well, I was told to leave, which I thought was a good idea, to be perfectly honest with you, at that point. It was a couple of months after my father's suicide. My mother told me to get out of the house. So I contacted social workers. I went down to the local health board. There was only 10 or 15 minutes walk from the house. And I went down to them and they placed me in a hostel. So they had me out of the house within a week.
My goodness. What impact did that have on you?
Well, residential care. I mean, this was in the spring of 1990, so it was quite a while back. 23 years ago, residential care was... I mean, I'm sure it's not great today, but it was worse then. There was no sense of stability at all. You were constantly being shifted from placement to placement. Very often, stints of homelessness in between times, or, you'd be months and months on your own in B&Bs just looking after yourself, this type of thing.
Your dad took his own life in 1989.
That's right, yeah.
And presumably, you, as a young child, you're confused.
It was a very high-stress situation and I had a lot on my plate. I had a lot to process, I suppose, in my mind.
Yeah.
It was hard. But
in other words, what I'm trying to get at is you had to look after yourself. You had to grow up pretty quickly here, Rachel.
I did, of course, yeah. And... by the time I was 15, I was homeless. I was out of the residential care system at that point and I was homeless proper, the street.
At age 15, I could hardly tie my own shoelaces. You were out of the house. No roof over your head at 15.
That's right, yeah.
Big pressure. Where did you live? What did you do at night time?
Oh, God. I mean, that was just such a merry-go-round. I'm sure I've forgotten most of it. But I used to sleep anywhere and everywhere I could find somewhere to put my head down. Park benches, every type of public place you can think of. I went to sleep in McDonald's one morning on O'Connell Street and got flung out of there after about 20 minutes or so. You just went to sleep anywhere you could, any bit of a few steps or with a bit of a canopy or keep the rain off you. It was a very, very hard time.
How did you get involved in prostitution?
I met a young man in his early 20s. Very often the way young girls do get into prostitution, they'll meet somebody who have this great idea about how they're going to earn money, and that's exactly what happened to me.
He just offered money to you? Was that it?
No, no, he didn't offer me any money. He just, it was quite the opposite, actually. No, he had this idea about how I was going to get myself out of my situation, and he was homeless himself, so of course that suited him. And so I ended up on the game. I was on the game within less than a week of having met him.
And you remember the first time that you were a prostitute, do you?
Do you mean the first day or the first punter?
The first punter.
Ah, yeah, of course you do, yeah. I mean, I've talked about that publicly already, so it's not ground I want to go back over. But what I will say is that it was just from the very get-go something that I absolutely hated, and something that I was very aware that the men knew that I hated, you know.
You know, and I don't want to push you on it, and I respect that. I just, what I'm trying to get you to convey here, because I don't want prostitution to be glamorized in any way. I'm trying to get you to convey how much you hated it, and the total lack of respect that men have when they use women in this way.
Well, the truth of the matter is that men who pay for sex have no respect for women generally, never mind the women they're paying. You know, people often ask you about the violence and how much violence there was. And what they're missing when they ask those questions is that prostitution is violence in and of itself. It is a form of violence. It's paid violence. And people get very confused on the point of whether or not this can be classified as genuine violence against women because there's money involved. But what I always say to them is, look, you know, if you were to take the sex out of the equation, because people's minds tend to become scrambled when sex becomes involved at all. They don't seem to be able to see straight. So the comparison that I make is if a person was getting slapped in the mouth, okay, and they were accepting money for that physical abuse, would that make the person who's paying them any less abusive? You know, of course it wouldn't.
Mm.
You know, it would be a very difficult thing to do to convey in the space of one conversation the absolute degradation that's involved in prostitution. But, you know, I had nights where I was physically abused in cars, up laneways, you know, all sorts of locations. And I would just go straight back to work because I couldn't allow what had just happened to me to sink in. I couldn't allow it to overtake me mentally, if you know what I mean. So I would just go back out, hit the street again and again and again. And I would get through anywhere between, it could be as few as 4 if it was a slow night, or it could be as many as 12. And if people think that a young girl, you know, or a young woman, you really, in fact, any bloody well age of a person, of a human being, if they think that you can get through that many strangers invading your body from one end of the week to the other and come out of that without any kind of psychological scarring, they're just living on some other planet.
What does it do to you psychologically?
Well, it breaks you down in a way that it breaks you down on so many different levels. It's difficult. It would be difficult to describe them all. Emotionally, first of all, You're just cold. You're very frozen, shut off from people. You know, it's very, very difficult to be capable of giving and receiving affection, giving and receiving any kind of love. I lived prostitution for seven years, from I was 15 till I was 22. And by the time I was 22, I was an absolute and utter wreck. And the only way I got through the last 3 or 4 years of those 7 years was down to the really intense cocaine addiction I developed at that point. You know, women in prostitution, people, I've heard the question asked, where's the harm? And I kind of laugh at that question. It's such a bizarre question because I think about the women and young girls that I knew and the state that they'd be in, a lot of them on alcohol. There was a good bit of Valium and, you know, those kind of tranquilizer drugs taken. The women on the streets sometimes were on heroin. the women indoors were more often on cocaine. That's a funny thing about prostitution as you shift from area to area, because I worked the streets, I worked the indoor massage parlour trade, I worked the escort end of the business, I did call-outs to homes and hotels, I worked as a stripper, I was photographed pornographically, I worked just about every end of the sex trade I've ever heard of, and I've never seen anything anywhere other than degradation. And that's, to be perfectly honest with you, that's what it is.
I'm trying to understand the mindset of the men who, presumably some of them convince themselves that they're decent citizens and yet they're doing this.
Oh yeah, most of them would have themselves convinced that they were decent citizens. Most of them would tell you that they were just buying a service, you know, and they would reduce this woman to the status of a service. You know, what she does to them is just a service. And it's a convenient lie that they're telling themselves, because the reality is, if they were to walk into a brothel and see their own daughter sitting on the bed providing the same service, they'd have very different ideas about it very fast.
And they'll probably see it as some type of upper end of the market that they're using. It's not a market, it's human beings. And is there an upper end? Or is it all just the same, dressed up in a different way? Exploitation of women.
That's exactly what it is. I mean, the upper end, there is no upper end. That's a load of nonsense. Certainly you're earning more money when you're doing a call out to a home or a hotel, or you're working from an escort agency. There's more money involved in what you're doing. If anybody thinks that that makes things better somehow, they're just flat out wrong. I mean, when I was on the streets earning a pittance compared to what I earned in the upper end of the indoor trade, we had a lot more bodily autonomy. You know, it was understood and expected that there were boundaries. Most of the men got that when you were on the streets. They most certainly didn't get it in the escort agencies. The attitude was, I've paid you £150, you know, I'll do whatever the hell I like.
How do you get out of that world?
I think how you get out, to be honest with you, starts in your mind. For me, I knew that I just simply couldn't stay. I couldn't, because I was absolutely mentally ravaged at that point, just incapable of conducting even my own life. I had to get out, otherwise, I'll tell you one thing for sure, I'm 37 today. I was 15 years out of prostitution just during the week. This is my anniversary, actually. I was laughing with the girls. There's no way I'd be alive today. If I was still in prostitution, I either wouldn't be alive, or else I most certainly wouldn't have a life worth living, that's for sure. As to how you get out, it's a really sad question for me to consider, because the reality is most women that I met, most of them were girls, 15, 16, 17, that age group. Most of them didn't get out. Some of them are dead now, of heroin. One of them is doing a life sentence up in Mountjoy Prison. A couple more of them are still alive, but be better off if they were dead. They're in such a condition now from the drugs. You know, so what I really would like for people to look at and understand is that there is a human cost. When a man goes into a brothel and pays money for sex, there is a cost involved, and it has a hell of a lot more to do with psychological damage and emotional trauma. That the cost is not the 20 quid or the 200 quid or whatever. It's not the man paying the cost, it's the woman.
You got out, you left Dublin. Where did you
go? Yeah.
Where did you go to?
Well, that's something I'm not going to disclose, because it was a town not too far from Dublin.
Okay.
And it was just a point in my life when I was healing and getting better, and my son was spending his first year in school, so I don't want to get into what town it was.
You kicked cocaine, cold turkey?
Yeah.
That takes a lot of strength, resilience, determination to survive, I guess.
The first few days after you come off cocaine are pure hell. It's a depression so deep, it's beyond description. But, you know, what people don't often think of is you go through about 9-10 months after that where you're just dealing with a very low mood all the time, you know. So if you were to come off cocaine like that and everything else in your life was rosy, it would still be a hard time. But trying to come back to society from a place of prostitution while you're trying to get your child on the right road, settled into his fourth year in school, and come off cocaine all at the same time, I'm very, very glad I done it. I'm very grateful that I was able to manage it. But I don't know how I didn't have a nervous breakdown.
Are you proud of yourself now?
That's a funny question. I've been asked that question a few times, and to be perfectly honest with you, I don't connect to that feeling.
Well, you see,
I don't know why.
Can I tell you why I ask it?
Maybe, sure, go ahead.
Maybe for the context. I admire people who have needed to fight back on their own, who have had the strength from within themselves to fight back and survive. And you're one mm-hmm. of, that's your story.
Well, thanks very much. I appreciate that. I'll tell you, though, I mightn't feel very proud, but I certainly am very glad. I'm very glad and very grateful, and always have been. But at this point now, I mean, the reason why I decided to speak out publicly, I had about 4 years after I got out of prostitution in 98, and it was in the spring of 02 I started to write the book that I released a few months ago. And it took a long, long time to write that book. It was like 11 years from start to finish, because it wasn't something that I could sit down and do every day. It just would have been far too painful. So I just visited it and revisited it over a very long span of time, every few weeks or months. And that's why it took so long to complete. I kind of feel that everything happens for a reason, and that the timing of that book was just supposed to be.
Slightly more than that, isn't it? Because in you telling your story your way, it's power. It's you in control, which you never were when you were being abused and exploited.
Yeah, that's very true, because I wouldn't have had any sense of... I didn't have any real control, obviously, for my first 14 years of life. And then, you know, I had precious little for the following seven. So, you know, I did. I went back to education at 24. And I went and got my degree in journalism and that. So that was really the first time I'd ever had a hold of the reins on my own life.
I think we should end this, Rachel, with you reminding people once again, because you've been strong in doing it throughout this interview, of the reality of prostitution. You know, you have had a gun held to your head. You have been beaten. Remind people just what the reality of prostitution is.
Well, I'll give you an idea of the reality of prostitution. And I spoke about this publicly recently down here. When I was 16 years of age, I was grabbed a hold of by the back of my head in a car and had my face smashed into the dashboard to the point that the blood was running out of me. The whole problem was this man wanted oral sex without a condom, and I refused to give him oral sex under those circumstances. And, well, he forced me to do it. And that is in no way unusual. In prostitution, there's relentless violence, and what's even more common than violence is the threat of violence. The threat of violence never goes away. So for day to day, you're doing things you don't want to do anyway because of what might happen, and the way that you're constantly reminded that you're the one who's in the inferior position in the situation.
Rachel, thank you so much for talking to us.
Thanks very much for having me.
Thank you, Rachel.
Bye.